Frida Fertility aims to be couples' go-to brand for making trying a little less, well, trying. Their effective and science-backed products aid in conception, whether you've just started or have been at it for several months. Here's the thing, nobody teaches us how to get pregnant. So when it comes time to conceive, a lot of us just don't know what to do, where to go, and whom to trust for help. That's where Frida Fertility comes in. Their science-backed tools aid in conception, whether you've just started your trying journey or have been trying for several months. Developed with fertility specialists, Frida's at-home insemination set comfortably delivers sperm up to the cervix, no doctor needed. And the Frida Fertility ovulation test kit is a reimagined tracking and prediction system designed with the accuracy you need while trying to conceive. Again, Frida Fertility is designed to make trying a little less trying for couples trying to conceive. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, Target, and at select CVS near you.
This is Sounds Like a Cult, a show about the modern day cults we all follow.
I'm Issa Medina, and I'm a comedian.
And I'm Amanda Montell, author of the book Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism.
Every week here on our show, we discuss a different fanatical fringe group from the cultural zeitgeist that puts the cult in culture, from hypebeasts to momfluencers, to try and answer the big question.
This group sounds like a cult, but is it really? To join our cult, follow us on Instagram at SoundsLikeACultPod.
I'm on IG at Issa Medina, ISAAMEDINAA.
And I'm on Instagram at Amanda_Montell.
And for bonus material, juicy cult discussions, and more, feel free to hit us up on Patreon at patreon.com/soundslikeacult. Now let's jump into this week's topic. Or would they want us to jump into this week's topic, or is that not minimalist enough?
No, they would want us to like walk calmly and with equilibrium.
Okay, let's walk calmly with sandals into this week's topic. I also feel like they would wear those kinds of shoes that are like toe shoes. You know, the ones that have like individual spaces for your toes.
Oh my God, yes. My high school calculus teacher would wear those.
Of course he did.
Yeah. He was just sitting around thinking about numbers, wearing his toe shoes.
I don't like people who wear those shoes.
They are, I don't want to see like your toe crevices.
Yeah.
But this is not the foot fetish episode.
No.
We already did that one.
This episode is on the cult of minimalism.
Which is a word that can mean many things. I mean, when I think of minimalism, I think of a couple things. I certainly think of Marie Kondo.
Yeah, of course,
immediately. The life-changing magic of tidying up. You touch something, if it doesn't spark joy, you throw it away. So I think of that whole trend. I also think of, like, the minimalist aesthetic. Like,
yeah.
Japan-y style and Scandinavian mid-century modern furniture.
Yeah, today I think of the Kardashians' home.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Which, like, LOL is so ironic, and we'll talk about this later, the juxtaposition of, like, extreme wealth and so-called minimalism.
Yeah, it's insane. Their house looks like a museum, and it's like, if you didn't want anything in it, then why did you spend...
Were you just watching that Kim K house tour?
No.
I was.
Today?
I was just watching it today.
Oh.
I do think of, like, this aesthetic that's, like, rich as fuck, but at the same time, like, has no personality.
Yeah, it's like when you watch HGTV for 3 hours straight, the first hour you're like, oh my God, everything is so beautiful and clean cut. And then the second hour you're like, all right, I'm a little numb. And then the third hour you're like, this shit is basic and not cute.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, minimalism is also this promised lifestyle that, like, if you can just get rid of all the excess consumerism in your life, then you will have less stress and more enlightenment. And it's supposed to heal you in the ways that cults often promise to. When you go to Divine Minimalism online, like, what comes up?
It's actually like an American visual arts movement from the 1960s and early 1970s, which entailed like architecture and like it was a style more so than like a life idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like now it's more so like get rid of all your shit and
yeah,
and move away from it because it doesn't give you joy.
Right, right. So I was reading this piece from The Guardian that was talking about how minimalism as a lifestyle really spiked after the 2008 recession, like out of necessity. You know, it's like, we're now, none of us have any money, so we're going minimalist and consuming less because we have to.
Yeah, and I also think it was a combination of, like, in 2008, that was right when, like, marketing started to become a thing in our lives.
Like, internet marketing.
Yeah, internet marketing and, like, and it, social media marketing with like Facebook coming up. And so like everything was about branding. So I remember like the cool girl from my high school was like started going, you know, thrift shopping.
Right.
And like I thought going to Abercrombie was cool, which is like expensive and annoying. And then she was like, oh no, like we went thrift shopping. And all of a sudden, like just because she said it with confidence, I was like, thrift shopping's the new thing.
Well, I think it's no accident that thrift shopping and the exercise of self-branding and the recession all sort of happened at once, because people needed to be minimalist out of necessity, but also like it became this brand. Like it became this sort of hipstery thing. And then as we started to come out of the 2008 recession, that's when the idea of minimalism was not really necessary anymore. It was just kind of bougie.
Did the 2008 recession ever end?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe it started to, and then the pandemic hit, and that's why millennials are depressed.
Yeah, millennials have been through a lot. I identify as Gen Z.
By convenience.
By convenience, by 1 year.
Yeah, you are cuspy.
I'm a cusp, baby. But yeah, I think it's funny because they made the branding into like all things that were like uncool. Like, what was it? What was it? The like mason jars and like it's rustic like, chic.
Yes.
Like rustic
shabby
just,
chic.
Yeah. Or like remember when like Chipotle opened and all their pipes were showing?
Yes.
Like all the pipes on the ceiling.
Yes.
It's like that just looks like an unfinished business.
Right. There was also this morality attributed to it, because you know how like during times of economic crisis, hemlines get longer? It's like
I did not know that.
In the roaring 1920s, like everyone was wearing those short little flapper skirts because the country was thriving.
Yeah.
And then in the 40s, when we were having to like ration shit, skirts were long.
Wait, that's nuts. Like, so women like are allowed to show leg when like the country's doing well, but like when it's not, it's like hide the legs.
Like symbolically, yeah. It happens naturally. It's not like someone makes a rule. Well, the fashion.
Do you think it still happens today?
Yeah, I definitely do. Yeah. Think of like maxi skirts emerging during the 2008 recession. It's like no one's doing well, so we like cover up.
That's so funny because I feel like no one in LA is doing well, but we don't cover up. Everyone's showing leg all the time. And I think that says more about our mental health than we want it to.
So then it's no accident that shortly after the recession, that's when Marie Kondo and the life-changing magic of tidying up really started to take off, because it's like, during times of larger cultural tumult, we look to something new to heal us, to fix us, to make us happier. And here was Marie Kondo with her pretty face and her well-packaged brand being like, minimalism will save you now.
Yeah, what year did her book come out?
It was 2010.
Oh, so Marie Kondo's book came out right in 2010, literally during the 2008 recession.
Yeah, so I think then minimalism caught on as this movement that had an aesthetic associated with it, a morality associated with it. Now we can all identify minimalism on Instagram and Pinterest.
Yeah, and in that time period is when Pinterest started to blow up.
Yep.
Or what's that blog that gave everyone an eating disorder?
Tumblr?
Yeah. Or like Tumblr, and it's like all of these brands of like beautiful, just
yeah, like
simple,
restrained.
And I think that's also when like the branding of this product is going to save your life developed.
Mm-hmm.
Like the branding of like, you don't need anything else. The only thing you need is this product, and this is the final product that you're ever going to buy.
Right. Because millennials are less brand loyal than previous generations. So
yeah,
we need brands to represent more than just a product. Like it needs to represent an identity and a way of life.
Yeah.
So a lot of brands were like, we're minimalist, we're restrained, but we're still luxurious.
Yeah. I also feel myself doing that same thing that people did during the 2008 recession, like as a young adult with like not that much money. I'm like, I'd rather just have like a couple cute outfits and be like, I'm simple, that's my style. But it's because I can't afford to shop as much as like everyone else in LA. So I'm like, oh no, this is just my style.
Yeah, right. So I think like minimalism as a brand or as a lifestyle gives people this sort of illusion of choice.
Yeah.
And also this illusion of power, because it has some like individualist undertones. Like by you being a minimalist, you single-handedly can heal your life, be less stressed, but also heal the planet, because consumerism is destroying the planet. So
yeah,
if you go minimalist, you're going to help climate change, which is a much larger issue that requires corporations to participate, not just us, you know?
Minimalism, when you think of it, you see this idea that's like, it's gonna help you save money, it's gonna make you a better person, it's gonna make you a healthier person, it's gonna bring back like relationships and joy into your life.
Yep.
It only gives and it doesn't take, which is ironic because it literally makes you throw all your things away.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there is plenty about minimalism, which, by the way, was not invented in 2008, you know, like, and not even just talking about the art movement from the 60s and 70s, like minimalist like ideologies have been around for centuries. Yeah. And we'll talk about that more with our guests. But I watched our guest's Netflix documentary about minimalism and I was super inspired by it. And my boyfriend and I started doing minimalism Sundays after we watched it, where we would every Sunday throw away five things or get rid of five things.
What did you throw away? Your house is full of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So we would like, I would get rid of like an old shirt that I don't really wear anymore.
No, but it still is.
Oh, yeah, I know. This is the problem because I myself am a tchotchke queen.
Yeah. You reacted to minimalism the way I reacted to Cowspiracy. Like I was a vegan for 5 minutes and you threw away four things.
I was a minimalist for 5 minutes.
So speaking of that documentary, those are our guests for today, Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, who actually go by The Minimalists. They have a cult following of their own of over 20 million people who they've inspired to live with less through their ideas in their books, blogs, and podcasts, and their Netflix documentary, which
yes.
clearly made you throw away 5 to 7 things. I think it's really important to hear from them because they have such a fair perspective. Like, by the end of the episode, you'll see why we interviewed the minimalists themselves, like, you know,
yeah,
coming from a fair source. Can you guys briefly tell us who you are, each of you, and how you beat the minimalists?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Joshua Fields Milburn.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Nicodemus, and yes, we are the minimalists. I really started with Josh, so you should probably start explaining who we are.
Well, the short answer is we're the minimalists because the domain was available for $7.
Yeah.
So theminimalists.com. But we stumbled into minimalism over a decade ago. My mom died, my marriage ended both in the same month. And I started looking for the right cult to join.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I was just looking to figure out what had become my life's focus. I realized I was focused on all the wrong things. The cult of consumerism in a way, right? I was so focused on so-called success and achievement, and our culture, that's the accumulation of stuff. That's how you know you're successful. But success was kind of making me miserable, and so I knew I needed to sort of simplify my life. Ryan and I grew up really poor, and we thought the answer to happiness was making a lot of money. So throughout our 20s, we climbed the corporate ladder, and we actually made really good money back in Dayton, Ohio, and I was a director of operations. I ran 150 retail stores. I was living the American dream, but it was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
And so when those two events happened to me, I just started looking around and I stumbled across this thing called minimalism. And I saw all these different people who had simplified their lives. There were young people, old people, rich, poor, black, white, people with families, people who were single. But they shared a few things in common. I realized that they had simplified their lives in order to make room for something that was more meaningful. It kind of started with the stuff, and I think that's what we think of minimalism, we think about the stuff. But it went so far beyond that. So I simplified my life over about 8 months, got rid of about 90% of my material possessions, which sounds really radical at first, but I don't think minimalism is really that radical. I think it's a practical lifestyle, because the average household has about 300,000 items in it. So if you get rid of 90% of your stuff, you're not living like a monk or an ascetic. You're getting rid of the excess stuff. And people at work started coming up to me and saying things like, you seem less stressed. You seem so much calmer. And
you're glowing with emptiness.
It's a memoir title.
Yeah.
Nice. Glowing with emptiness.
Although at one point our boss did ask me if Josh was trying to like depressed or like trying to kill himself because he was giving away his stuff.
Oh, and they were scared you were like emptying the house for the event.
They didn't understand what was going on. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's funny. That's
conscientious.
That's one of the telltale signs of someone who's suicidal, at least in our culture, is like we're letting go of our stuff.
Right.
That's how much importance we assign to our things.
Yeah.
Ryan came up to me one day. We were at work. I've known him since we were fat little fifth graders. And he came up to me and he said, hey, why the hell are you so happy lately? And that really opened the door for me to talk to him about minimalism.
to evangelize.
That's right, yeah.
When you said I got rid of 90% of my material as a comedian, I was like, oh my gosh, did you throw away your notebooks? I was like, what are you going to talk about?
Not your standby jokes. Yeah. Oh, too funny.
Oh, man. Yeah, he introduced me to minimalism. I just, you know, went to him and kind of asked him, like, what is going on with you, man? Because he was visibly happier. And he wasn't supposed to be happy. I mean, his marriage ended and his mom passed away. So, yeah, I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, what drugs are you on? I was very into drugs back then. So I was, you know, hoping he had a drug that I'd never heard of before.
Just the right cocktail.
Right, exactly. And he talked about minimalism, which really, to me, was just some common sense stuff. Stay out of debt, simplify, you know, don't cling to material possessions. So I got excited. I'm like, hey, if it works for Josh, it'll work for me. All right, dude, I'm in. I'm going to be a minimalist. Now what? Like, I didn't know what to do.
What's next?
Yeah, so Josh had simplified over about 8 months. That was a little too slow for me. I'm a little bit more radical, so I needed, like, a faster approach. And Josh and I came up with this idea called a packing party, where we decided to pack all my belongings as if I were moving. And then I would unpack the items as I needed it over a 3-week period.
Yeah.
I knew it would, like, you know, A, force me to confront all my things. And by doing that, it would shift my perspective. That's what I was hoping to get out of it. And
I did.
Think
about it. Don't you hate moving?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm about to move. And 3 weeks is a good time period.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You hate moving because, like, you're actually confronted with all of those things. And sometimes we move one box and it doesn't even get opened before we move again.
Yeah.
But then we feel compelled to move that box on. And so that was the one time I was like, Ryan, you're not moving. But if you want to confront all of your stuff, pretend you're moving.
Yeah. And I tend to anthropomorphize my belongings. So if I don't use something in a certain period of time, I tend to feel bad for it.
Mm.
And then I'll, like, want to use it, but I don't actually need it anymore.
Yeah.
So don't you feel bad for the clothes you don't wear?
Yes, I feel bad for them. And then, like, there are shirts that I'll, like, try to wear because I'm like, I have them. And I'm like, they just look so bad.
Yeah, I know. And so, like, that's a lot of emotional energy we're spending on a thing.
Yeah.
Dude,
my mom, on the other hand, though, she threw away everything growing up. Like, if I left my homework on the kitchen counter, it was gone the next morning.
Extreme minimalism.
So I feel like she's, like, a minimalist.
Yeah.
She's comfortable with letting go. And I think that's become a problem in our culture is we're so attached to things that we cling, even when they stop serving us.
Mm.
As minimalists, Ryan and I aren't against material possessions, but I don't want to pick up a bunch of baggage and then drag it along with me. Everything that I picked up, I chose to put it down when it started weighing me down, sort of preventing me from going where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so, like, that packing party, you know, we did that for 3 weeks. I had 80% of my stuff still, you know, sitting in those boxes. And I got rid of it. I donated, sold, recycled, just got rid of 80% of my stuff. And that's where the minimalists.com started. It was with that packing party story. I know if I'm going through this, there's someone else going through the same thing. And this is really going to help, like, at least that one other person who's going through it.
Yeah.
And Josh always loved to write, just putting our story out there. And yeah, that's where it all started.
And a lot of people have
resonated.
Have flocked to hear it.
Yeah.
So can you define for us what exactly is minimalism, at least according to you? Because I think of, like, a minimalist aesthetic, but then I also think of sort of, like, monastic minimalism that's connected to, like, Eastern religious practices. I think of minimalism in many different ways. So what is minimalism the way you see it? And who gets to call themselves a minimalist?
Like, oh, well,
that's
goodness.
A great question. Yeah.
First off, I'm still trying to figure out what minimalism is. And I don't feel like, you know, us being the minimalist, like, I don't feel like we have the authority to do that. In fact, when we were coming up with a website name, Josh was like, what do you think about the minimalists? And I'm like, it's okay. But I didn't want to, like, just all of a sudden be the authority on minimalism, especially because, uh-huh. like, I was just starting out my journey. I still, you know, had a lot of stuff to go through. So I'm like, let's name it something else. He's like, okay, do you have a better idea? And
trying to be minimalist.
I came up with some really bad ideas. What was the really bad one, dude?
I don't know. Turning over a new leaf.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Aiming wonderfully or something. I don't know.
You're like grabbing your things and throwing them away.
Right.
.com. Casually and without knowing what's going on.
Yeah. So Josh is like, I couldn't come up with anything better. Josh is like, well, let's just use it as a placeholder for now. You know, we didn't expect it to be what it is now. And turns out it's still a placeholder. And we're still looking for a better name. So if you have one, let me know.
No, I love it. I think it's minimalist.
Yeah.
It is. It's minimalist.
But minimalism really, you know, it's a thing that helps us get past the things so we can make room for life's most important things, which aren't things at all. But really, you know, minimalism comes down to living intentionally. And, you know, as Josh mentioned, the average American has over 300,000 things in their home. So when you have that many things, like, you need some kind of tool to help you filter through it all.
And it's so American, really, too. Mm. Like, I mean, everyone, a lot of different cultures have a lot of things. But I feel like in other countries, you don't see as many storage units as you do in America.
Oh. Yeah, that's a uniquely American thing. So
yeah.
I don't think hoarding is uniquely American, but 90% of the world's storage units are in the United States of America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it is a uniquely American issue. But we have a lot of stuff, but our podcast is, you know, about half of the listeners are in the United States, about half are overseas. We have people who email us from Kenya. Hey, can you come do a tour stop here or Afghanistan? And it's like, wow, I didn't know that this message would resonate, because it's not just about overconsumption. It's about this desire.
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking about minimalism, Ryan and I are talking about this lifestyle minimalism. There are other types of minimalism, like literary minimalism, like Laurie Moore, Bret Easton Ellis, you go back to the 80s, or Raymond Carver, or you go back to like minimalist architecture, like John Paulson.
Yeah.
And there are different types of minimalism, right? When we're talking about minimalism as a lifestyle, we are talking about simplifying our lives in a way that identifies what things add value to my life.
Yeah.
So it's not about deprivation. And I think that's a common misconception. We're not the deprivationists.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not about simply getting rid of things that I would enjoy. In fact, I remember one of our tour stops, a guy came up to us afterward and he said, "It seems like you guys just didn't get rid of anything important." I said, "Yeah, that's the point."
Yeah.
Right.
But there's no such thing as, like, if you own, say, 30,000 things, like, you don't get to call yourself a minimalist.
No.
Like, you have to wear all black. You have to wear sandals.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan,
you have to have great hair.
Yeah.
Hilarious
some great personality
hair in this room right now.
Yeah. Yeah, truly.
If you own 30,000 things, Ryan and I will shun you. We won't talk to you.
You definitely don't get a certificate.
Right. Yeah.
We'll
exactly.
gaslight you until you feel compelled to let go. No, like, and that's the funny thing is, like, I don't want to convert anyone to minimalism. Like, I don't even go around talking about being a minimalist.
You're like, it's just my Instagram handle.
I didn't jump up when Ryan said, "Why the hell are you so happy?" That opened the door for that conversation, but I didn't say, "Hey, look at me, I'm a minimalist, and you need to be too, because I need you to get rid of some stuff."
Mm. Yeah.
It's not about convincing anyone of anything. It's simply sharing a recipe. And so, yeah, we'll share some boundaries that have worked really well for us, but I don't really get caught up in rules or legalism.
That's a great way to also, like, spread the message, is, like, not intentionally spread the message. It's just, like, you're telling people your experience and how it made you feel.
Yeah.
I think I would be bad for your movement, because I would be like, I'm a freaking minimalist, and you should all do it with me.
Those people, though. And you know, so be it. I mean, I think some people might find value in setting up some boundaries for themselves, and we all want the answer, and that's why we turn to cults or to religions or whatever it might be. We turn to these things because they have the sort of the rule book, right?
Yeah.
Ironically, Ryan and I wrote something called the Minimalist Rule Book. People can download it for free on our website, but you soon find out it has nothing to do with real rules. Mm-hmm. They're sort of just these boundaries that work for me and Ryan, and they're expandable, they're contractible, and the reason that I appreciate that is, boundaries aren't bad. I mean, we are in a studio right now. You have four walls. These are just boundaries.
I think there are, like, 18 walls in here.
Yeah, that's
true. An oddly shaped room.
And the reason we set up boundaries is because we've realized if we go too far outside those boundaries, there's some sort of discontent. The life that I was leading before, there was a whole lot of discontent and misery.
Mm.
It's in the founding documents of our country about the pursuit of happiness, but it's that pursuit of happiness that is the path toward misery. We think buying the things is going to make us happy.
Yeah.
And the problem is, the reason it's so insidious is it does make us happy. And that's sort of the problem, is the getting those bits of happiness that we don't actually experience the contentment, the peace, the freedom.
Because
that we're
when you buy
for
something, you get like a spike of dopamine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not sustainable. Like, eventually your dopamine response is going to get worn down. And then what?
Yeah.
As an immigrant, my my American dream is to like buy a home. And it's like it I can't buy my first home and then be like addicted to buying homes. You know? That's not really healthy. But I still would like to at some point. But what do you guys think are like the origins of minimalism in terms of like how it became so buzzy in the West?
Yeah. So I think it is an old answer to a new problem. And so the old answer, you see it in all the ancient sort of wisdom traditions, whether it's Hinduism or Christianity or Islam, Buddhism, etc., any ancient wisdom tradition, you'll see similar discussions around living simply.
Vows of poverty.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not living with excess, not living beyond your means, etc. The problem is new, though. Never before have we had so much access. I mean, literally one click, same day delivery access to virtually anything that we want, right? And now, in a way, like we've created the Star Trek version where something can simply materialize on your doorstep. Now, the cost of that, though, is there are a lot of underpaid workers, people who are taken advantage of, and there's a lot of misery that goes into that entire system, right, of consumption. We don't see that. We just simply see the nice, shiny gadget that shows up same day, right? And so the problem is new, and that problem is we have access to more things than ever. And that would be wonderful if it was making us more joyous, more peaceful, more tranquil. But it's doing the opposite. That device in my pocket is that now not just comparing me to my next door neighbor, the sort of keeping up with the Joneses, it's comparing me to everyone I've never met.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm comparing myself to everyone I've never met, it's a perpetual cycle of discontent. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. In fact, we never even stop to think about what is enough. In our culture, it's always more, more, more. How do I get more? Mm. But the path to enough is usually through subtraction, through less.
Yes. Oh,
we
my God.
We have more than enough.
We have this, I'm sure you know, about additive bias versus subtractive bias. Like studies have been done that show that when people are presented with a problem, their impulse is to fix it by adding something, a gadget, a person, an app, whatever, when oftentimes the solution is just to take something away. Like if you have a junk drawer full of bullshit, like your impulse might be, oh, I need to order like a drawer organizer from Amazon.com.
Yeah.
When really the solution is throw that shit away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. I saw this TikTok the other day about how we're not supposed to know what everyone else is doing and what everyone else has.
Of course.
All of the time. Oh. And it kind of applies to dating too. Because with dating apps, it's so unhealthy to know how many single people exist out there.
Because
then you're reminded, you're like, then why am I single if all of these things exist?
Our ancestors knew like 50 people their whole life and had like 50 things.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not built for this.
Right.
Okay, so let me ask, whenever something kind of ancient or Eastern and kind of like spiritual in the way that minimalism can be makes its way like into like commercialized culture, it tends to get kind of culty kind of fast because people start to capitalize on it and make these gigantic promises. What do you think is like the most realistic single promise, and how do you think some people take its promises too far?
When it comes to like the one single thing, I don't make any promises. I don't promise anything, you know, like I don't have like a prescription to be like, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're going to feel better. I think minimalism, what I will say is it offers an opportunity to people. So for me, when I saw minimalism, I saw an opportunity for me to kind of step outside of my tornado of a lifestyle. I was drinking a lot. I was doing drugs a lot. I was spending all types of money. Like as soon as I got my paycheck, it was already like all spoken for. And I was just, you know, trying to have all of the ephemeral pleasures that we all desire, right? And I was
the hedonistic lifestyle.
Yes. I was like being, you know, as hedonistic as, you know, $150,000 a year can buy you in Ohio. Like I was living
weird.
It. Yeah. Right. I just saw an opportunity for me to step aside from that lifestyle. And then what minimalism helped me do was make room for other things in my life. Like the one thing that really stands out to me is when I was confronted with 80% of my stuff in those boxes after the packing party, I'm like, wow, look, here's like tens of thousands of dollars worth of things I've brought into my life trying to make me happy. And like, here they are, like obviously not doing their job. And then I started to think about like what my priorities were. So you know, at the time I'm sitting there, I'm like, what are my priorities? I'm like, well, health, like you got to be healthy, right? If you're not healthy, you know, health is wealth. If you're not healthy, you don't have anything. You got to have good relationships in your life. You got to, you know, have that passion project that you're working on. You got to contribute beyond yourself in a meaningful way. You got to grow. And I'm having this kind of, you know, internal dialogue. And I'm like, I'm not focusing any of my time and energy on those things. Mm-hmm. Like, that's maybe what I value. But again, like that stuff, that hoard of stuff, like that's where all my energy was going. So for me, like minimalism helped me to uncover what was important to me and really helped me get clear on like what I was doing with my resources. And I'm not just talking about my money. I mean, I know that that's like the number one resource that comes up, but we have our time, we have our attention, we have our creativity. We've got all these other resources that we just give away all the time.
Was there like a moment of anxiety when you guys finally like kind of got to a place where, you know, you got rid of a lot of things and you had time and space and like mental capacity to like focus on those things?
I mean, we were like the go-to guys in our corporate days. Like, I mean, like if our phone wasn't ringing, like then the phone was turned off, like something was wrong. So, you know, we were the go-to. People needed us every single minute of, you know, every single working day. When I left my job, I got laid off.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah. We love that for you.
Well, you know, we started the minimalist when we were in the corporate world. And, like, I knew it was a matter of time.
Yeah.
And really, thank God they laid me off because, I don't know, I just kept telling myself, like, one more, I'm just going to save up for, like, one more month.
Always.
And then, like, that month would come. I'm like, well, I could go one more month. Going from 100 miles an hour to like zero, that was anxious. That was anxiety inducing for sure.
Yeah, that word busy, it's the worst four letter word in the English language, right? Because when I say I'm busy, what am I really saying? My life is out of control.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other people are
so
dictating
true.
My schedule or my inbox or my text, whatever it is, I'm responding to everyone else's emergency, right? But just because something's urgent to you doesn't mean it should be urgent to me and vice versa. It doesn't mean that it's unimportant just because it's not urgent to me, but then we treat everyone else's emergency as though I need to react to this right now. And so I found that I'm a lot more focused now, far less busy. Our material possessions are sort of this physical manifestation of what's going on inside us.
Yeah.
So when we have a lot of external clutter, it's probably because we have a lot of internal clutter, mental clutter, emotional clutter, spiritual clutter, whatever you want to call it. There's some sort of psychological clutter, the stuff that's going on inside us. And when you start dealing with that excess stuff, you realize how frantic it is in here.
And I'm sure excess can be defined differently depending on the person. Like, because I love a tchotchke, I cannot lie. But there is a threshold past which it's tchotchke excessive. And that threshold might be here for some people, and for me it's here.
100%.
This is probably a harder question, but as thought leaders who have an amazing way with words, who are very inspiring to a lot of people, how do you make sure that you're leading a purely positive cult rather than a more negative?
You are an inspiring thought leader, Joshua.
Yes. Wow. You are. And it can't be denied that you do speak with this very emotive, like almost preacher's lilt.
Well, I feel like even just talking to you right now, you think about what you're going to say before you say it. I can see it. But it's smart. I think everyone should do that.
We ultimately want to connect with other people, not even like-minded people necessarily. That's what Ryan and I have learned. He and I are definitely not like-minded. We vote.
Yes, we
for
are.
You're wearing the same thing.
We vote for different people. We have different religious and spiritual beliefs. We have radically different personalities. And yet, like, we've been best friends for 30 years. And it's
Frida Fertility aims to be couples' go-to brand for making trying a little less, well, trying. Their effective and science-backed products aid in conception, whether you've just started or have been at it for several months. Here's the thing, nobody teaches us how to get pregnant. So when it comes time to conceive, a lot of us just don't know what to do, where to go, and whom to trust for help. That's where Frida Fertility comes in. Their science-backed tools aid in conception, whether you've just started your trying journey or have been trying for several months. Developed with fertility specialists, Frida's at-home insemination set comfortably delivers sperm up to the cervix, no doctor needed. And the Frida Fertility Ovulation Test Kit is a reimagined tracking and prediction system designed with the accuracy you need while trying to conceive. Again, Frida Fertility is designed to make trying a little less trying for couples trying to conceive. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, Target, and at select CVS near you. I am so giddy to tell you about my absolute favorite iPhone game of late. It's called June's Journey. If you like mystery games that are really easy to play and very aesthetic to look at, then you have got to check this one out. June's Journey is basically a hidden object mystery game where you're solving this detective story centering on a protagonist named June who's living in the 1920s, so very glamorous. She has to travel back to her family's island estate to solve the mystery of who murdered her sister. And my favorite part of the game is that as you find these different clues and help solve the crime, you get to decorate the island estate with various pieces of furniture and other accoutrements. It is so relaxing to play when you kind of just need to switch off your brain. And I'm pretty bad at iPhone games and video games in general, and I can still enjoy it. So I really think you'll love it. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Because we're not trying to convert someone to our singularly correct point of view. I've let go of the
I've
convincing.
Been trying to change my dad my whole life.
Yeah, you and me
and,
both.
And that always, like, it turns out in a way, what's the old quote, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Yeah.
I think that's like...
He's just like, yeah, I say that all the time. I'm like, I love that quote. I actually have it tattooed.
and so, like, we can try to drag someone kicking and screaming to our worldview, but as soon as you let them out of your sight for a second, they run back to their preformed dogma.
Yeah, of course. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to play a game.
All right.
This is a game that we sometimes play on our podcast.
Okay.
It's called Culty Quotes. And it's basically a game of who said that. So we're going to read you a series of pithy quotes. And you're going to have to determine whether or not the speaker was an infamous cult leader or one of you.
That's so good.
We've never done it where it's the guest's quotes.
But you kind of repeat yourself.
Yeah. This is exciting.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
You want to start?
The first quote. And I have all of these tattooed on my body, actually. So just so you know. Okay. First quote. B. Don't try to become.
That is like some sort of religious, spiritual quote.
Yeah, that is that Osho, is, the Rajneesh Pram
Osho,
guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Quote number two, presents can't be gift wrapped.
That sounds like something that we said.
Yeah, it does. Sounds like something. It sounds like something Josh would say. Do you have the actual person who said it?
Oh no. Right. But undoubtedly it was you.
Yeah.
Beautiful quote.
That's great.
Okay, next quote. If you want to live a life of purpose, get clear on your value.
Oh, that's us.
Yes,
that's
specifically. Yeah, I've heard Ryan say that. Yeah.
They have everything they've ever said meticulously recorded and documented.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Life's too short to hang out with people who aren't resourceful.
That's not
us. Yeah, that sounds like that does not sound like us.
You guys know yourselves really well.
Yeah. You. That's the opposite of you. That's Jeff Bezos.
Your antithesis.
Oh, wow.
All right, next quote. You are not you. You are just reflections. You are reflections of everything that you think you know, everything that you have been taught.
That sounds like Chuck Palahniuk.
It's Chuck Manson.
Charles Manson.
Yeah, Chucks.
Wow.
Wow, that's wild.
Okay, next one. Everyone is hungry for praise and starving for honest appreciation.
That's someone else. I don't know who.
Yeah, that's someone else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's David Berg. That's a bad one.
Who's David Berg?
He was the Children of God leader.
Oh, that is a
He's
bad
a
one.
He's a bad one.
Yeah.
Not good. Should I say the last one in a British accent?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
If you refuse to change, then perhaps you deserve the life that you already have.
Definitely not us.
No.
That was you!
Really?
Maybe it was the accent that tripped me
off. It was the accent.
It was totally the accent.
Sometimes, like, we'll do an interview, And the reporter, like, I have in the past given the reporter permission to be like, hey, look, if you needed to, like, change something a little bit around to make it sound better for your article, yeah. like, feel free to kind of, like, shift the
yeah,
quote a little bit.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
So that might have been,
it could have been,
might have been something like that. But other than that, like, I would never look at someone and be like, you deserve what you got. You're the one refusing to do the work. Like,
all right. Contested.
I think it.
Well, because it's
but
it's
I
like,
would never say
I feel
it.
Like it's the end of a longer sentence.
I think
sentence.
It's the end of a longer sentence that might have been twisted by the cult of the media.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for playing Culty Quotes with us. If folks want to keep up with your work, your books, your podcast, your content, your cult, where can they do that?
You can just go to theminimalists.com. And Josh, what's your OnlyFans page?
It's him. It's just him in black t-shirts.
Right.
Or because it's OnlyFans, it's him in like orange t-shirts.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's what people really want to see, him in different
in any
colors.
Any color other than black.
Yeah.
Let me give you a chance to plug the rest of the things.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
All right. Just all there. Theminimalists.com. Yeah. Podcast, whatever else you want.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or don't.
Perfect.
You can let it go.
Social media. Yes. You can sign up for a weekly newsletter. Yeah, there's everything's there at theminimalists.com.
Amazing.
I love that.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Guys,
thanks
for
having us.
On the
this
podcast.
Is great. This is awesome.
This was so fun.
So, Issa, out of the three cult categories, live your life, watch your back, or get the fuck out. What do you think about the cult of minimalism?
I think it's a live your life.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think that minimalism is a live your life because after literally interviewing some of the leaders in the space, mm-hmm. I think they handle it so well. And as I always say, leadership can tank a cult or raise it to the moon.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a
lot. Never said that before.
I was just like, yeah, I've heard that. No, I think, you know, obviously there are bloggers out there who have really commodified minimalism and made sort of larger than life promises about it, what it can accomplish in people's lives. And when you're preaching to a vulnerable population, say people who are unhappy and like want to make their lives better, then there is a risk. But this kind of reminds me of our astrology episode because there really is no like single unifying leader in astrology, and there's really no single unifying leader of minimalism.
Yeah, and I also think the idea itself is so broad that minimalism is like sex. Like, you need consent, you know? And it's up to you to throw the things away. Like, no one's forcing you to throw those things away.
No.
So, like, you're the one who decides the boundaries.
And it's clearly defined in so many different ways. I can easily see how there could be a watch your back or a get the fuck out level cult that incorporates some of the tenets of minimalism. Like, in Jonestown, they lived with very little. But that wasn't a minimalist cult, you know?
You have to take it for the raw, like, broad idea that it is for it to be a live your life. Because mm-hmm. if you take it for like the capitalist version that it is, like if you take it for like the Instagram version that it is, then I think it's like, sure, it's a watch your back, like everything in capitalism.
Yeah, or like everything on social media.
Yeah, but if you take it for like the idea and apply your own vision to it, then it's a live your life.
Right. And I think the key is just like, if you're interested in minimalism, follow a wide array of people who talk about minimalism. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket.
And you can say that about anything. Like, you should always have multiple sources.
Exactly. Hello. Like, that's how you find yourself stranded on an ideological island when you only submit to one person.
Yeah. That's why I highly recommend the public library, as I've said before. Uh-huh.
Check out a book or 10.
Yeah. Don't let the algorithm follow you.
Yeah, I would say it is a cuspy live your life to watch your back.
You always end up adding a watch your back.
I love a bit of nuance. Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening.
We'll be back with a new cult next week.
And in the meantime,
stay culty,
but not too culty.
Sounds Like a Cult is created, hosted, and produced by Amanda Montell and Issa Medina. Kate Elizabeth is our editor.
Our podcast studio is All Things Comedy, and our theme music is by Casey Kolb. Thank you to our intern/production assistant, Noemi Griffin. Subscribe to Sounds Like a Cult wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.
And if you like our show, feel free to give us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. and check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/soundslikeacult.